Morning, everybody. It is 8 a.m. and we'll call the Academic Research and Student Affairs Committee to order. Winter, will you please call the roll?
Chair Geddes?
Here.
Vice Chair Carter? Regent Arascata? Regent Boylan?
Aye.
Regent McAdoo?
Here.
Regent Perkins?
Here.
You have
hold on, we're on.
You have a quorum present.
And I'd like to welcome Regent Arascata and Regent Boylan to their first ARSA committee meeting, one of my favorite committees. So welcome you all. We have a full agenda here today, and I just want to remind everybody out there that if you're not speaking, if you could mute your microphone and until you want to speak. And the easiest way to get my attention if you have a question or a comment is either to text Winter or to text myself, and I'll get you in the queue, and we'll go through the queue in the order that it pops up. So with that, we will go to item number one, public comment. Winter?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have one public comment submission. My name is Vicki Rosser, UNLV Faculty Senate Chair, members of the Academic Research and Student Affairs Committee. On behalf of the UNLV faculty, I would like to provide enthusiastic support for the following two proposals, number four and number five, as noted on the agenda. The first is the National Institute for the Advancement of Education. The goal of this National Institute is built on the foundation of innovation and research, that is to identify and disseminate the next generation of practice in urban education and educator preparation. The second is the MED in Intercollegiate and Professional Sport Management. This Master's of Education will provide specialized education in the leadership and management of sport organizations. As noted, the program includes administrative opportunities in youth and intercollegiate athletics and specialization areas such as diversity in sport leadership, sport analytics, and governance. I would also like to add that Dr. Nancy Lowe, who is the point person on this program, is one of the top scholars in the country on sport, and UNLV is indeed honored to have her here and directing this important initiative and program. Thank you for your support and consideration of these two proposals that will better serve our students and the community. Mr. Chair, that is all the public comment we have for now.
Thank you, Winter. Now we'll go to item number two, consent items. Do I have a motion for approval of the consent agenda?
So moved.
Second.
A motion from Regent Perkins, second from Regent McAdoo. Any questions or comments? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Hearing none, are there any abstentions? Hearing none, motion passes unanimously. Now we will go to item number three, the Regents Awards. Vice Chancellor Abba.
Thank you for the record, Crystal Abba, Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs. I will now read in the nominations into the record. For the Regents Creative Activities Award, Aaron Frock from TMCC, Joe Nathan Bynum from UNLV. For the Nevada Regents Teaching Award, Ronald Gonzalez from CSN, Dr. Pamela Sandstrom from UNR, and Dr. Jeffrey Smith from UNR. For the Regents Academic Advisor Award, Lauren Stevens from WNC, Juanita Etheridge from UNR, and Dr. Kwang J. Kim from UNLV. For the Nevada Regents Researcher Award, in the Distinguished category, Dr. Ian Buckle from UNR, and for the Mid-Career category, Dr. Scott Early from UNR. For the Regents Awards Rising Researcher, Dr. Javin Johnson from UNLV, Dr. Daniel McAvoy from DRI, Dr. Jennifer Pearson from UNR, and Dr. Kira E. Stull from UNR. With that, I would request the committee's approval.
Thank you. Do I have a motion for approval?
I so move.
I second.
Second from Regent Boylan. And Crystal, just for the new members, if you could give a brief overview as how these are selected.
This process actually begins in September. It is a highly rigorous process where we have for each award, there is a nomination committee. Depending on the award, for example, for the Academic Advisor Award, we have academic officers and then prior award recipients as part of that selection committee. Nominations are submitted by the institutions, reviewed by the nomination committee, then they are ranked. The committee then meets and discusses the nominations and recommend an individual to move forward in each category. As indicated, these are highly competitive awards, and as a result, they carry with them a stipend of $5,000 for each award, with the exception of the Rising Researcher, which is $2,000. Those award amounts are paid directly by the institutions.
Thank you, Crystal. Are there any questions or comments on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Hearing no nays, are there any abstentions? Hearing no abstentions, it passes unanimously. We will now go to item number 4, UNLV Organizational Unit Proposal, National Institute for the Advancement of Education. President Whitfield.
Hi, this is Chris Heavey, Executive Vice President and Provost of UNLV, speaking on this item on behalf of UNLV. Welcome. Thank you, Chair Geddes, for recognizing us for this request to create this new institute. Delighted to be in front of you today, and welcome to the new Regents. I look forward to getting to meet you in person when conditions allow. This is a proposal to create an institute at UNLV that will aim to have broad ambition to improve the training of teachers and the outcome of students across the nation. It will be home to a diverse array of existing efforts to build the teacher pipeline and to improve the training of teachers. And its goal is to be a catalyst for innovation by developing and disseminating best practices in education. We hope to capitalize on partnerships within the Las Vegas community that are already existing, as well as the diversity of our community, which we all know represents the multicultural nature of the entire future of our nation. And we're starting with big ambitions to have broad impact across the nation and the world, as reflected in the name that this is the National Institute for the Advancement of Education and not just the Nevada Institute for the Advancement. I'm delighted to say that I'm joined today by the Dean of the College of Education, Dr. Danica Hayes. Happy to answer the easy questions myself, and I'll pass the difficult questions on to Dean Hayes. So happy to answer any questions that people might have about this item.
Thank you, Provost Dee. Regent Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know how many questions this might end up being, but it started off as one. So the first one is on page 14. It says that patents are included in the balance sheet of how the institute makes returns on its investment. What if there are no patents? Or are okay, I'll let that stay there.
Generally, the vision of these institutes is that they're to become self-supporting, and this institute begins with substantial contributions from an anonymous donor that laid the foundation for this work. And the goal will be to create innovation in the educational technology space that will hopefully lead to patents. Over time, essentially, we want to create different revenue streams that will support and grow the impact of the institute. I don't know if Dean Hayes would like to add anything.
Good morning, Chair Geddes and Vice Chair Carter. Thank you for your question, Regent Perkins. What we did as we planned out this budget was very intentional. We have quite a strong foundation in terms of philanthropy and some ongoing external funding to support some of the partnership work with the City of Las Vegas, as an example. And while patents is a potential goal and a revenue stream, we are very prepared to have other revenue streams through external funding, philanthropy, and other outlets such as state scholarships and programs.
Thank you for that. That answers those two questions. And if I have a fault, if I may ask one more question, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Regent Perkins.
How will you know if this institute is successful? Are there metrics that go along with this? Like, you start off at point A, and if you make it to point B, you're a success. If you make it to A and a half, you know, so what type of measurements are there? Are they embedded in here that make sure that the, I guess that you're on track?
And I'll say in general, we at the university have what we call the Council for Centers, Institutes, Museums, and Laboratories. And that group does a review of all independent centers and institutes each year and an in-depth study of their effectiveness every 3 years. And so essentially we start with a broad vision of what we're hoping to achieve and continue to review the performance of the institutes over time. If we do find that institutes are either not able to become self-sustaining or not having the type of impact that we had hoped, we sometimes return to the board to actually close institutes if they're not performing well. But we start with high hopes and a clear vision for having a broad impact on educational outcomes in the nation with this institute.
So there are benchmarks then?
Yes. So essentially, you know, this document sort of lays out a vision, and then that will get operationalized in annual reports that the center would submit to this council, and that gets reviewed on an ongoing basis.
Thank you. I'm done.
Regent Perkins, I'm seeing no other questions or comments. Do I have a motion for approval?
So moved.
Motion from Regent Perkins, second from Regent McAdoo. Any other questions? Yes.
This is Regent Carter. I just need to put my disclosure on the record for.
Oh, yes. Sorry, Regent Carter. I forgot.
I was previously a student in the gaming innovation course at UNLV, where I developed a casino game. If that game is marketed and sold, I'll be required to pay UNLV in the form of shared royalties pursuant to a standard contract that all students in the course are required to sign. I'll receive no remuneration from UNLV. I disclose this relationship under NRS Chapter 281A, as recommended by the Nevada Commission on Ethics. As this agenda item does not affect my interests, I will be voting on this agenda item.
Regent Carter. And for the record, if we could also include that on item 5 as well, so that Regent Carter doesn't have to read it again. So we have a motion and a second for approval of the National Institute for the Advancement of Education. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Hearing no nays, are there any abstentions? Hearing no abstentions, it passes unanimously. We will now go to item number 5, UNLV program proposal, Master of Education, Intercollegiate and Professional Sport Management. Provost Heedy.
Thank you, Chair Geddes and Regents. We're delighted to be before you today asking for approval of what we believe will be an important new program in our portfolio of educational offerings. We all recognize that sports are a big deal in our society, both in the K through 20 system, as well as professional sports. And in recent years, we've seen the sports explode here in the Las Vegas area in terms of the addition of many professional level sports. And so it's an exciting opportunity for us to enter with the first degree that would train people to work in this important specialization. And as the public comment noted, we're very privileged to have Dr. Nancy Lowe, who is a nationally recognized expert in sports management, who would lead up this program that would essentially bring together existing resources within the university to offer this kind of specialized interdisciplinary training. It'd be a 34-credit degree that would be completed typically over 4 different semesters, and it would include mentorship from existing professionals in the sport management arena, as well as an internship and capstone project. No program like this exists within the state of Nevada, and so we really think it meets the workforce and student success mission of NSHE, and we're really delighted to be entering this space in what we think there will be substantial demand for this kind of specialized training and great employment opportunities for students who receive. Thank you, and happy to answer any questions. And again, we have Dean Hayes here and Dr. Lowe, who can help with the challenging ones.
Thank you, Duke. Do I have a motion for approval?
So moved.
Motion from approval from Regent McAdoo.
Second
from Regent Carter. Any questions or comments on the proposal? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Hearing no nays, we do have Regent Carter's disclosal on this item as well. So there's no need for an abstention from Regent Carter. Are there any other abstentions? Hearing none, the motion passes unanimously. Now we will go on to item number 6, handbook revision, new program proposals. Vice Chancellor Abba.
For the record, Crystal Abba, Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs. Before you, you have a briefing paper and policy proposal. This is a handbook revision for which I will be requesting your approval. Specifically, we are requesting to amend Title IV, Chapter 14, Section 7 to add the provision that program proposals for new degree programs must indicate that the proposing institution consulted and she institutions with the same or similar programs. You will recall from the September meeting of this committee, this was actually recommended by Regent Carter as we were discussing programs that were developed that had similarities to other programs that already existed in the system. The rest of the committee concurred. We then drafted the proposal and took it to the academic officers. They fully supported this draft language. So with that, I bring it to you for final approval and ultimately codification. I'd be happy to answer any questions and request your approval.
I have a motion from Regent Carter, second from Regent Boylan. Any questions or comments on the proposal? Regent Carter, would you like to add anything?
Yeah, sure. I'm thankful for this. I didn't realize that we didn't have anything specific to this until that other meeting where we had a couple programs that were very similar in nature, but we have a lot of expertise across the system, and hopefully we can harness that expertise by at least requiring a little look with other institutions and conversations, here inside the institution. So I like this policy. Thank you, Crystal Abba, Vice Chancellor Abba, for putting this together, and hopefully this will be a positive for new programs coming through the system.
Mr. Chairman, I should also indicate that in the program proposal form that you're all very familiar with, we will be adding a section to that where it requires the institutions to document their consultation with the other institutions. That way it'll be in the formal proposal in terms of written documentation.
Thank you. We have a motion, we have a second. Any other questions or comments? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Hearing no nays, are there any abstentions? Hearing no abstentions, it passes unanimously. We'll now go to item number 7, handbook revision, the Nishi planning report. Vice Chancellor Abba.
Thank you. For the record, Crystal Abba, Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs. Before you, you have a briefing paper and policy proposal. This is actually a clarification in the policy. As many of you will recall, in the December meeting, the planning report was presented to this committee and then approved by the full board. The planning report is a requirement in state law and board policy that requires that institutions disclose their plans for new programs, student services, and research activities over a four-year planning horizon. This essentially clarifies that to the extent with our existing protocol where institutions, as they bring forward new programs, they are required to have previously disclosed those programs in the planning report. This essentially indicates that if an institution did not include a new program in their planning report, they have to provide the reason why when they present it to the committee for approval. Similar to the prior proposal, we have amended the program proposal form to include an area where if a program was not previously included in the planning report, they will document the reason why. And oftentimes that reason will be that, for example, for a community college, a company may have approached them with a request for a new program, and in terms of timing, it wasn't included in the planning report. So with that, I would be happy to answer any of the committee's questions and request your approval of this revision to Title IV, Chapter 14, Section 3.
Do we have a motion for approval?
So moved.
Motion from Regent Carter, second from Regent McAdoo. And I would want to mention to all the new regents, read this planning report when you get a chance. It really is what we're planning for the next 4 years and what we're working on, and it is a partnership with the Nevada legislature where we show them what we're working on. And this amendment does allow for that creativity and flexibility to create programs in real time as our state needs it. I have a motion and a second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Hearing no nays, are there any abstentions? Hearing no abstentions, it passes unanimously. We will now go to item number 8, handbook revision, transfer and articulation, Vice Chancellor Abba.
For the record, Crystal Abba, Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs, you have before you a handbook revision that includes a briefing paper and policy proposal where we are requesting to amend Title IV, Chapter 14, Section 15. This actually comes as a recommendation from the transfer audit that was presented to this committee at its September meeting. There were two recommendations for policy revisions in that report that are included here. You did previously approve those recommendations, which is why we're bringing them back now. You'll see that we're amending again Section 15, Subsection 1F, to provide that, as you're all aware, for transferable associate's degrees within the transfer agreement, it has to outline the course requirements for the first, for the 4 years. And this essentially indicates that for the first 2 years of that year-by-year course outline, they can't include upper division coursework. There's actually no practical reason to do so, but there are some cases where they have put 300 and 400 level courses in the first 2 years of the 4 year course outline. And as a result, you saw from the audit that those transfer agreements then did not comply with board policy. The second piece of this also concerns transfer agreements, whereby we're requesting that within the transfer agreements, institutions disclose for the community colleges when those courses are not available to be taken at the community college, but the course can be taken at the 4 year institution and then reverse transferred to the community college for the purpose of achieving the associate's degree. With that, I would be happy to answer any questions and request the committee's approval.
Do I have a motion for approval? Motion.
So moved. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, you're fine. Second for Regent Boylan. Any questions or comments on the item?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Vice Chancellor Abba, if I could ask a question. Is there a specific program, or can you give me an example of a program that would have a 300, 400 class in the first 2 years at community colleges?
That's exactly why we want the policy there. There really is no reasonable reason for 300 and 400 level courses to be in the first 2 years of the year-by-year course outline. And that's why we're actually prohibiting it here.
Thank you.
Being no other questions or comments, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Hearing no nays, are there any abstentions? Hearing no abstentions, it passes unanimously. We will now go on to item number 9, the Silver State Opportunity Grant, and we'll go to Assistant Vice Chancellor Renee Davis. And again, for the new members, the SSOG was created not too long ago, 2015, and it was the first need-based financial aid scholarship that the state has funded and provided. It's a program that we've fought for really decades, and it's one of my favorites. Go for it, Renee.
Thank you, and good morning. And she, Assistant Vice Chancellor and Director of Student Affairs. And while my slides are coming up, I'll just say that I agree with you very much, Regent Geddes, that this is one of my favorite programs, in particular, due to all the work that went into it and the targeting, which I'll talk about here in a minute. Next slide, please. So today's presentation, I'm going to try to do a kind of a comprehensive overview of the program. And so here's a list of all the things I hope to cover. Next slide. So starting with a little background, as Regent Geddes said, this program was created in 2015 by the Nevada legislature. The program is pretty unique because it's based on a shared responsibility model, which As I've described here on the slide, it really is a philosophy for awarding aid based on the expense being shared by partners. The state, by making a substantial investment in low-income students, is giving them both the incentive and the financial means to enroll and complete full-time credit load each semester. And that really is the goal, with the outcome being the state getting a return on investment in terms of improved time to degree for students and also more graduates. So that's the goal of the program. And if we can go to the next slide. This is just a little graphic to explain the shared responsibility model. Hopefully that will help kind of bring home that whole concept of the shared responsibility. And I'll get into the details on the next slides. So one of the elements that we look at when we're doing the calculation of the award amount is the cost of attendance. And if you were at the meeting when I presented the last financial aid report, I talked a little bit about cost of attendance then. It's something that we use in federal aid, but is extended and used in many other types of aid. And it's made up of more than just your typical tuition and fees and books and supplies. We know that students have other expenses, and it's recognized that helping them to cover some of these expenses is going to help make them a more successful student. So in addition to those, the expected areas, there's also room and board, transportation, and then there's a category of kind of a miscellaneous personal expense category. There is typically a different cost of attendance based on the housing status the student reports on their FAFSA, and that could be off campus, on campus where possible, or at home with a parent. And for Silver State Opportunity Grant, we do average the cost of attendance for purposes of the award calculation, which I will explain momentarily. Next slide. So here's 5 years worth of the average cost of attendance that we use in the award calculation from year one of the program through year five. You'll see that the most expensive category is living off campus. And then there's the living with parent category, which there is still a room and board component within the living with parent budget, but it is smaller since there is expected to be some support. Even if the student is paying a little rent to the parent, it still is expected to be lower than if the student is supporting themselves off campus. And then there's also an on-campus category. Since the only institutions participating in this program are NSC, CSN, GBC, TMCC, and CSN, we don't use the living on campus category as much. Up until year five of the program, it was only based on GBC, so that's why you see that change between year four and year five. Once we added on NSC in their dorm expenses, it raised that average. So. Just wanted to make sure you knew why that change was so pronounced. Next slide. So one of the important things to understand about the SSEG program is the eligibility requirements. And of course, a student in order to receive SSOG must be a degree-seeking student. I mentioned already that it's offered at the State College and our four community colleges. They must enroll in at least 12 credit hours, and I will elaborate on that a little bit later, that apply to their program of study. And essentially, they must be college ready. That's kind of part of their skin in the game, as well as I'll talk a little bit more about that when I explain the award calculation. They must be a Nevada resident. Of course, they must file the FAFSA, because without that, we would not be able to determine whether there's a federal contribution in the formula. And then also on an ongoing basis, they must meet the satisfactory academic progress requirements, same as a student receiving, say, the Pell Grant or a federal loan. Next slide. So I alluded to some program changes in the enrollment level requirements. So in 2019, the legislature approved a change to the program, which reduce the minimum semester enrollment level from 15 to 12 credits. Now, at the same time, the legislature created a tiered awarding priority order, and the statute requires that students enrolled in 15 credits, all those students must be funded before the institutions can move on and hit the next tier. And so at this point, we have only awarded 15 credit students, and that's because we run out of money before we funded all the 15 credit students. And I will get into that a little more detail as we move through this presentation. Next slide. So discussing the award calculation, going back to that shared responsibility model, it's basically that average cost of attendance that we just talked about. And we take from that the student contribution, which is actually set in procedures and guidelines. Right now it's set at $5,500. And then we also subtract to the estimated family contribution that is calculated from the FAFSA. And then any federal aid the student receives, which is Pell Grant, Federal Supplemental Educational Opportunity Grant, or the TEACH grant. And what we wind up is what is the state contribution in terms of the SSOG award calculation. And I've provided a little bit of an example here using that cost of attendance for the off-campus, subtracting the student contribution, in particular the student that example I'm using. They have a zero EFC, which means that they have the highest need. And then the maximum Pell Grant award, the optional FSEOG award that is awarded by the campus, federal dollars. And then that would leave the student with an SSOG calculation of 9,000. Now the program maximum is set at 5,500. And, you know, if funding was unlimited, we actually believe that funding that whole SSOG calculation would be ideal, but we also have to live in the real world where the funds are limited and we want to be able to stretch this out. So we tried to hit the balance between having a substantial award that truly makes a difference and allows the student to attend full time without having to spend too many hours at work during the semester, but also at a balance where we could spread the awards out a little more than if we actually went with that pure calculation. So next slide. These are just some sample financial aid offers. So you can see how the SSOG works with other aid in the package. The example on the left is for a state college moderate need student. And then I used a community college high need student, and so I used an on-campus and an off-campus just to kind of give you a flavor for how those calculations work. And you can see in both cases, the moderate need and the high need student, they both have what we call in the financial aid world remaining need. And so that means there is room within that cost of attendance where the student still needs to, even though we've calculated in a student contribution and the EFC, the student still has some remaining need to cover throughout the year. So that really just brings home the point that we have some wonderful financial aid programs, both from the federal government and from the state, but there's always more need that students have to support their educational attainment. So next slide, please. This is just a recap of the awards that we made in years 1, 3, and 5. In 15-16, that was the first year of the program. The legislature had allocated $2.5 million. That was fully awarded. And we did have remaining unfunded students. Then in 17-18, that was before the program changed to allow us to fund anyone besides 15 credit students. We actually expended almost $4.2 million. And then in 2019-20, we funded $4.9 million. And the reason we didn't make it to five was because of the budget cuts in the last quarter of that fiscal year. So we were actually geared up to start awarding Tier 2 in 1920, and then we had to abandon that when the board of the budget cuts came through. And then in the table to the right, of course, that is just the number of students. And so you can see in 1920, we served, 1,786 students. So that's a substantial number of students. We, of course, always want it to be more, but it is a program that is helping a lot of NSU students at the five participating campuses. Next slide. And then wanted to give you just this data on the recipients by race and ethnicity. You'll see that we do award a broad sector of our students, and if you compare the percentage minority of students receiving SSOG with the campus populations, you can see that our campuses are all doing a good job of trying to get the funds to the neediest students in the variety of backgrounds. Next slide. And the true goal of the program, reaching low-income students, this is the one program where we have one state, formal state program, I should say, that we have income data for all of our recipients because of the FAFSA requirement. And you can see here that we are truly hitting low-income students with this program. We have the medium income there, and then the total dollars awarded in each of the categories. And again, dependent and independent students. Dependent students are usually under 24, unmarried, meet some other criteria based on the FAFSA. And then independent students, they're either over 24, could be married, could have a dependent. And so those are the two categories traditionally in federal student aid. Let's go ahead and go to the next slide. Getting back to the statement on my first slide, which was one of the purposes of the program is to help students be more successful and to have the return on investment. We wanted to show you these comparison groups of students. We started with this data the very first year one SSOGO report. And you can see that the students who received SSOG and they're in 15 or more credits as of that first term when we pulled the data, 65% of those students have earned a degree or certificate by this past summer. And you can see it's definitely worth noting that even the SSOG eligible non-recipients, so remember back in fall of 2015, we ran out of money before we funded everyone. Those students have a very high percentage of having earned a degree or certificate as opposed to those in less than 12 credits. I mean, now for sure, these numbers are not a graduation rate, it's just the number of recipients. Because remember, the SSOG program goes to students in different levels. It's not a program that goes just to recent high school graduates. So we don't have a true cohort because we have a mixture of freshmen and sophomores, juniors and seniors all mixed into that group of students. But the point is well taken that this 65% is a good rate for these students. So let's go to the next slide. And then this is the earned a degree or certificate by June 2020. And then this is, you can see that the percentage are very substantial here. Go ahead to the next. This is just backing up what you saw in the other two slides, and this is just persistence from fall to spring, and you can see that these rates are very high for these students. Next slide. So I wanted to shift, and I'm getting near to the end here, so shifting to the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. As you all know too well, there have been budget cuts, and that includes to the SSOG program. As I alluded to earlier, the fourth quarter of the 1920 award year, we lost the 67,000. And then for the next year, for the current actually award year, there was a reduction of about $800,000. Now, the good news is that ANCHI was able to partially offset the $800,000 reduction. So we ended up with about $4.5 million to award this year. We're just making kind of the final determination and doing cleanup, but it looks like we are not going to be able to move to Tier 2, that we will have some unfunded students who are in 15 credits for the year. And the reason we have to wait until spring to do that determination is that when we do the awarding at the first of the year for fall, we do award fall and spring. But as you know, lots of things change between fall and spring for students, and sometimes enrollment levels may change or a student may graduate in fall. And so then we usually have funds that we need to reaward in a whole new crop of eligible students in the spring semester. And then lastly, we ANCHI did request in its budget a $5 million per year fully funded, but there was a 12% reduction included in the governor's executive budget that's going to the legislature for approval. And I believe that's it, but next slide. So now I'm available for questions if there are any.
Thank you, Renee, and I just wanted to hit on that last slide for the new members again. After the special session last summer, where we had to do all the reductions based on the epidemic or pandemic, the board voted to allocate funds from its investment account, where we had this reserve available, and it got distributed to all the campuses based on the formula that we use in investment. But there was funds that went to like system administration that didn't need it. So we took any excess we could and we piled it back into the SSOG program. So that's that 352,000 Renee referenced in that slide. Crystal, did you have anything to add? Nope.
Thank you.
Okay. Any questions or comments from the board or the committee members?
Mr. Chair.
Regent Carter.
Yes, and I'll let Vice Chancellor Abbott decide if this is appropriate for this question or this area or not. But I know we have a simplified FAFSA that just like passed through the government. Does that affect this program or the calculations that go into that, or is that a separate agenda item that we can talk about at a different time, or I guess both?
Actually, I think it's both. And Renee, I know that simplified FAFSA will go into effect in 23, and there are going to be some impacts, but I think that it will be minimal. Renee, would you like to respond?
Sure. Renee Davis, and Chief Assistant Vice Chancellor and Director of Student Affairs. I've been participating in a lot of meetings and webinars to determine how the need calculation is changing, because you're absolutely right. There are some substantial changes to the way the need index. There's a name change. We're going from EFC to another name, but more importantly, that need analysis is going to change. In terms of the impact on SSOG, really what it will mean is that we will likely have a lot more eligible students. And so since we don't have a program where we have the funds to try to parse it out to every eligible student, it's not going to impact us in terms of awarding. It just means that, unfortunately, we probably will have more unfunded students in the program.
Any other questions or comments? This is an information-only item. Oh, sorry, Regent McAdoo.
Oh, Chair Geddes. As many of the regents know, I don't usually let the Silver State Opportunity Grant get spoken about without me expressing that I fully support that. I also have the concerns, I think, that Ms. Davis just addressed, and that's with all the increased unemployment. We're going to have more students with greater need. I know that probably... I don't really have anything that I could prove that with, but I think all of us realize that that is the case. So I certainly hope that we can figure out a way to make up that $600,000 difference. I don't know if we can, but I sure hope so. And really, I'm always advocating for a bigger budget for that scholarship, because it genuinely is need-based, and we see completion rates with those students. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent McAdoo. And an important point of that is, if you saw all the uses SSOG can be used for, the students can use this for food insecurity, they can use it for housing insecurity. It isn't just tuition and books. So it is a very good program, and it does help all the students who really need it, but it does need to be a much, much bigger program. See, no other questions or comments. We will go on to item number 10, the UNR Nevada FIT program. President Sandoval, did you want to lead off, or should we just go to Acting Provost Thompson? Not hearing President Sandoval, we'll go to UNR Acting Provost Jeff Thompson.
So I believe President Sandoval was muted, so I don't know if something he wanted to say.
President Sandoval, did you want to say?
I apologize, Mr. Chairman, and what a way to start the meeting on the mute. But yes, good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Board of Regents, and my congratulations to the new members of the Board of Regents. It's our privilege to be here on the ARSA committee and present the UNR FIT program. With me today is our Acting Provost, Jeff Thompson, who I'm very honored and pleased to introduce to you, and he will provide the report. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Provost Thompson.
Thank you, Chair Geddes and Regents. Jeff Thompson, Acting Provost at the University of Nevada, Reno. I want to thank you for this opportunity to present a program that we have developed to aid in the retention, persistence, and graduation of our students. We've been piloting this program and developing it for a number of years. This program or type of program started at Louisiana State University by Sherry and Bill Wischusen, who are biology faculty members. And it was from a concern that there are a lot of students who were coming to college, well-prepared to be in college, who struggled for the first semester and then many times dropped out of the university or had their academic hopes and dreams dashed by struggling in that first semester. And this is certainly something I've personally seen having taught introductory science classes for many years. So the Wischusens developed a one-week boot camp called BIOS that started the week before classes began. And it was for biology students. And this program has been replicated at other universities, but almost exclusively for biology students or chemistry students. We started the program, a pilot program, in 2013. And we call it the Freshman Intensive Transition Program, or FIT. The students call it a boot camp. And we started with biology majors. And at that time, I was Dean of Science, and our Provost Kevin Carman supported and initiated the program. I want to stress that this is not a remediation program. This really is a transition program. We're addressing the needs of students as they come from high school into college and addressing their fears. And we are stressing them quite a bit. We make them work very hard so that they understand that they are in a different environment than they were in high school. The program's grown tremendously, and we're very proud of the results. I'm very excited that presenting today is Felicia DeWald, who's the director of the Nevada FIT program. She not only runs the program, but she has led the expansion of the program. So I will turn it over to Felicia.
Thank you so much, Provost Thompson, and thanks for having us here today. And I'm happy to get to share a program with you that makes such an impact on students. So if you could proceed to the next slide for me. So first of all, what is Nevada FIT? That FIT, as Provost Thompson mentioned, stands for Freshman Intensive Transition. And we're a week-long program that takes place right before the fall semester starts. It is a one-credit experience for incoming freshmen, and it begins with an early move-in. And the whole purpose of the program, as Provost Thompson mentioned, is to ease the transition from high school to college. College academics are very different from high school academics, and even students who maybe were very successful in their K-12 education may come to college and they've never had to study before in their life, and they need to understand what is different about the college environment. So every student truly benefits from this program. We did build our model off of the program called BIOS at LSU University, but we are the first university to take this model and apply it to all students across all majors. And we've recently won awards from APLU and WCCU for our efforts. So over here on the right, you see this graphic that has all of our Nevada Fit boot camps. So Nevada Fit's kind of the umbrella term, and every college on campus runs a unique version of Nevada Fit. And we also have a program called Exploration Fit, which is for students who enter college undecided with our exploratory majors. You could go to the next slide, please. So this graphic shows you what is common to all of our Nevada Fit boot camps. At the very center of this graphic, you see what we call the core class. And this is the most important element of Nevada Fit. The core class is a class that students will take in their first semesters, and it has the reputation for being difficult. Students attend lectures every day during Nevada Fit in this core class. They get homework, they even take exams at the end of the week, and they get feedback on their progress. We'll talk in a minute about what we use as our core class during Nevada Fit. We also offer skill sessions during Nevada Fit, and these are sessions to give students tools to be successful inside and outside of the classroom. So some examples of the skill sessions we do are diversity, equity, and inclusion, mindfulness, financial literacy, and we invite our student services on campus to help us present that material. One example of a skill session that's really effective is we give students a homework assignment and we assign them time to work with our tutoring centers. So we are not just introducing students to our resources on campus, we're actually asking them to use them during Nevada Fit. And what we see is during the regular semester, students are visiting these support services more frequently because they're already comfortable using these resources during Nevada Fit. We also provide students with major experience during Nevada Fit, and this is where the colleges and camps get to be the most creative with their material. A couple examples are the College of Engineering EFIT program has students attend lectures in aerodynamics and projectile motion, and they have in groups students build trebuchet launching devices for a big launch at the end of the week. Our College of Business BizFit program has another fun major experience. They have students develop products in teams and pitch them to faculty and community leaders in a Shark Tank style competition. And the students get really into it, of course. So the major experience is really important because it allows students to determine early on what it is that they want to study. So after Nevada Fit ends, we do see some movement between majors, and this is actually really positive because they're determining very early on what they want to study, and they're not wasting time and money on classes that may not count towards their degree, which could eventually push off their graduation rates. The last piece of Nevada Fit are the PAC mentor groups. In survey, I think this is what the students rank as the highest. They love their PAC group. This is a group of 7 students within the same college or fit camp, led by an upperclassman mentor who is also within the same college. And this mentor attends classes with students, leads study sessions, and reflections and discussions. We hire over 500 student leaders on our campus to work as mentors. And we have many, many students who were participants in Nevada Fit as a freshman and have worked for the program every year since. So their start at UNR every year begins with Nevada Fit. So it's really part of the institutional fabric of our university now. You could go to the next slide, please. So this is a look at how our program has evolved over time. We started in 2013 with a program for just biology students like BIOS at LSU. We had 48 biology students. We called it BioFit. And we also had a control group of students who applied and were not randomly selected to participate, which we'll talk about in a minute. This becomes important to some of the data we collected. This first program was so successful for our institution, we saw increased retention rates. So in 2014, most colleges on campus started their very first version of Nevada Fit. And they were allowed to kind of do what they wanted with the curriculum. And we did not see after this first year the increases in retention that we were hoping for. So in 2015, we kind of had to go back to the drawing board and say, what was BioFit doing that these new Nevada Fit boot camps were not? And the answer was that core class piece. But many of our colleges on campus did not have an obvious first semester course that had the reputation for being difficult, the way biology or chemistry does, for example, in the sciences. So we worked with institutional analysis to determine if there was a class we could offer students during Nevada Fit that had the same kind of impact. And they came back to us and said math could fit that bill. Math is a class most students will take in their first semester, and it's at the top of their level. So in 2015, for all of our FIT camps, besides the College of Science, we used math as the core class. And we offered every one of our math classes and had faculty who would be teaching those classes in the fall teach them during Nevada FIT. And we do our best to match students not only to the same math class they'll have in the fall, but also to the same professor they will have in the fall semester. And this proved to be the secret sauce, as we like to call it. So 2015, we saw the increases in retention we were hoping for. So in 2016, this is where you'll see the program really starts to pick up. 2016 was the first year the College of Science required the program for all students. We had a little under 1,000 participants. 2017, the College of Agriculture, Biotechnology, and Natural Resources required the program. 2018, the College of Education joined in requiring. And then 2019, business and engineering required the program for all students. So five of our colleges required it in our most recent program. 2020 was meant to be the year when we required the program for the first time for all freshmen. But unfortunately, due to the pandemic, we needed to cancel the program because we did not have time to adapt to that material effectively. So 2021, this fall, will be our first year of all-in. All freshmen will be required to participate. We are so excited, and we've had the time now to develop a schedule that would allow for participation no matter the restrictions that are in place. And we hope there aren't any restrictions, but we do have a schedule that can operate even if we have restrictions due to the pandemic. You could go to the next slide, please. So here's a look at one-year retention, beginning with 2013, our starting year, all the way through our 2019 program. The gray are students who did not do Nevada Fit, and the blue are students who did do Nevada Fit, and that orange line is the average retention rate for the university. And you'll see increases of retention of about 5 to 10% for each of our Nevada Fit programs, and also for our individual college boot camps if we look at them individually. I'd like to point out the year 2014 is the least amount of disparity between participants and non-participants. And remember that this was the year when most colleges started their very first FIT program, and we didn't see the kind of retention we were hoping for. So 2015, we see the effect that we wanted. And then 2019 was our largest year ever. We had over 2,500 participants. Overall retention was a little lower for this freshman cohort in 2019, but we still saw increased retention for FIT participants compared to non of about 5%. And 5% increased retention is huge. 5% is about 200 students that are more likely to be retained from one year to the next. Next slide, please. Here's a look at one particular year. This is one-year retention for 2016. Same thing here, gray are students who did not do Nevada Fit, blue are students who did do Nevada Fit, and I've pulled all of our students, FIT participants versus non-participants, students receiving the Pell Grant, Hispanic students, and first-gen students. So this program is truly benefiting all of our students, including students who are underrepresented on our campus. Next slide, please. This slide is now showing four-year graduation rates, and it's kind of amazing to think that a one-week program could have an impact as far as 4 years later. And I'd like to just say that we know there are a lot of other factors that can contribute to graduation rates, but we believe at our institution it starts at Nevada Fit. We're kind of setting the tone for how students lead their academic careers at UNR. So I've broken down our four-year graduation rates a little bit differently. 2013, what you see here, this is our first year. That gray is students who did not do Nevada Fit. The blue is students who did our very first BioFit program, those 48 students that we talked about. And then this black bar are students from our control group. There's about 20 students in this population who applied and were not randomly selected to participate. And this is significant because in our earliest years, when students opted into the program and were not required to participate, one of our biggest critiques was, well, these students are choosing to attend. They're probably your most motivated students, and that's why you're seeing increases in retention. But this shows that the program truly has an impact, because that black bar, students that had equal motivation and did not participate in the program, and all the way as long as four-year graduation rates, appear to have an impact for our FIT participants. And then if you go ahead and click again, I've pulled some 2014 data for you as well. So this time for 2014, the gray are students who did not do Nevada FIT. The blue are students who were in a FIT program that was not the College of Science. Remember, this was the year when most colleges did their first FIT program and didn't have a core class. And then the yellow, holy cow, is our Science FIT program, which has really got the formula figured out by 2014. Super successful four-year graduation rates. We were pleasantly surprised to see an impact on grad rates for the non-Science FIT programs, because we did not see huge increases in retention in previous data. It clearly still had an impact. But this also shows you how important that core class is to our FIT programs. The difference between Science FIT with our biology, chemistry core class and our non-Science FIT programs just starting out. Go ahead and click, please. And then I pulled our 2015 and 2016 four-year grad rates for you to look at. This one's simply gray are students who did not do Nevada FIT, and blue are students who did do Nevada FIT. Next slide, please. This past year, we ran our first ever transfer FIT program, and we were able to do that in person despite the pandemic. We kept it small, like the early days of BioFIT, to test out this population. We had about 33 participants. You can see them wearing their masks in this picture. But transfer FIT lasted 2 days, and it's not like the week-long Nevada FIT that we do that has the 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. long, busy days like Nevada FIT is. And this was purposeful because we know that many of our transfer students are non-traditional students and that they may need to work during the week. So we wanted to still provide them with a FIT bootcamp experience and capture as many students as we could. So it lasted 2 days, started with an early move-in just like Nevada FIT. And because we did not have an obvious example of a common class all transfer students could take during FIT, the way we operate with our other Nevada FIT camps, we focused on themes. So career development, community exploration, both the campus community and the Reno Tahoe community, and resource use. These students also worked in packs with a mentor who was also a transfer student, and it was task-oriented. Just like our Nevada FIT packs do assignments and projects together, our transfer FIT packs and mentors worked on a transfer resource guide over the course of that weekend that they submitted at the end of the weekend. We did not get to test this out this year because Nevada FIT was canceled, but transfer FIT this year will end when Nevada FIT begins. So transfer students get to be part of the welcome events that occur on campus, such as opening ceremony. Next slide, please. And here's an early look at our transfer FIT retention data. This is just fall to spring retention data. The gray are transfer students who did not do Nevada FIT this year, and the blue are those 33 participants who did do transfer FIT this year. And we're already seeing an impact on our transfer FIT students, about what we see with Nevada FIT, almost a 5% increase. And this is just fall to spring. So we're very pleased and eager to continue tracking these students and expand the program. Next slide, please. So looking ahead, I mentioned this already, but Nevada FIT 2021 will be our first year the program's required of all freshmen. We're offering options for students to participate remotely if that's something that we need to do this fall. We also have a schedule that will allow for social distancing so we can maximize the number of students we have on campus if social distancing protocols are still in place. We are also collaborating with our New Student Initiatives office on campus. They run orientation. Now that we know that we will see every student at orientation and then again at Nevada FIT, we can scaffold the sessions that we do. So for example, we can start a diversity, equity, and inclusion conversation at orientation and then go even deeper at NevadaFit, knowing that every student will have received that information already at orientation. We're also collaborating on a single ceremony. So it used to be we had a NevadaFit opening ceremony at the beginning of the week and then a start of the school year opening ceremony at the end of NevadaFit week. Now we're combining those ceremonies into a single event. Finally, we are expanding our Transfer Fit program this year. We hope that every student who wants to attend is able to attend. And we also are starting our very first Transfer Living Learning Community, which is where transfer students can live in the dorms with other transfer students, and they will take a common class together. And that common class will begin with Transfer Fit. So Transfer LLC students will attend Transfer Fit weekend, and then they will also participate in College NevadaFit events throughout that week in order to earn one credit the way NevadaFit students do. Next slide, please. So this is a video I'd like to share with you that we had made in our most recent program, 2019. That contains student testimonials and parent testimonials. I think it's better that you hear it from our students rather than just from me. So go ahead and play the video for us, please.
Hello and welcome to the University of Nevada, Reno. As your first formal experience at the university, you'll be participating in a program called NevadaFit, along with all and other entering freshmen at the university. NevadaFit is a program that's unique to the University of Nevada, Reno. In this program, you're going to meet other students and be formed into groups called a PAC. You're going to find leadership from other undergraduate students, such as your mentor. You're going to meet faculty and staff and get to know them. You're going to learn about the resources and facilities that are available to you on our great campus. And finally, and most importantly, you're going to learn how to be successful in a college class. It's all part of our overall commitment to your success here at the university for a fulfilling educational experience and a great life beyond the university. I wish you all the best and look forward to seeing you on campus.
I'm really happy about NevadaFit. I think it's an awesome opportunity to move from high school to the college atmosphere, especially for kids who maybe school was always pretty easy.
This is completely different from high school, and it's going to be a huge difference and a huge change.
My daughter graduated from UNR, and they didn't have this program at that time, and she struggled her first semester.
My goal is for my daughter to learn the resources that are available to her here on campus, what tests are going to be like, what papers are going to look like, to learn the difference between high school and college.
I think for me, going through NevadaFit was, as a mentee, was definitely hard because it's like this grueling kind of long process, but it's also so much fun.
In it, I was so stressed and I was like, oh my God, this is the end of the world. Like, this is it. And then being a mentor, I'm like, it's really not. School afterwards is so much easier. Like, everything just makes sense. And so being a mentor, I can see that the bigger picture is that it is stressful, but it's so manageable, and you learn that from NevadaFit.
You don't get a lot of sleep, so you're kind of pushing yourself a little bit, but it's good. It's not too bad, but it's definitely a little bit more than I expected.
I can see the reasoning behind putting the kids through all like boot camps, like the hardships, like the early mornings to late night starts, because it really does help, like during finals week, midterms week.
What I hope to gain from the NevadaFit program is confidence. Confidence in herself, confidence in her abilities.
It's really interesting to see them go through the same things I went through, like being nervous and shy on the first day of fit, and then honestly just coming together as a group and working together and understanding that college is a lot more than just going to class.
NevadaFit has prepared me for my first semester in a sense of what I'm doing, just the daily life that I'm living, and the things that I have to do to be successful.
I'll know the campus a lot more than like I would have if I was just showing up on Thursday and then been like, oh God, where am I? It's taught me a schedule. It's taught me how to work with people. I've gotten to make connections before anyone else in the freshman class has.
The most challenging part of NevadaFit would have to be like the hour and 45 minute long math classes.
This NevadaFit bio class is a lot more difficult and challenging than the high school bio class because of the pace that she teaches at and the material itself.
Well, the homework was, it's been annoying to say the least, staying up until 11 o'clock possibly and getting frustrated at it and wanting to just rip my hair out.
But for me, it's been 1,400 miles from home. So the move in plus starting classes at 7:30, 8 in the morning till 10 p.m. at night with a bunch of people I don't know has been quite a system shock for me.
My advice would be to make friends, make study groups, and make habits that you will carry throughout the rest of your 4 years.
To be comfortable when everything's hard and everything's really uncomfortable, and just to like get out there, just be yourself and try to open up.
My favorite moment in NevadaFit so far has been my group's first study session, because me being a shy kid and our group being generally shy, we broke down not understanding material and we bonded over understanding it.
It was like 9 p.m. My entire pack was sitting, studying, and just trying to figure out these math problems and kind of freaking out. And I really feel like it bonded us during that moment.
Just meeting people, like new friends, because I've already made like a whole bunch of new friends, and it's just really cool and everybody's super nice here.
NevadaFit was a really great experience. It really gave me a sense of family, and now I feel part of the pack.
I got to meet a ton of new people that I have similar interests with, and I got to learn the rigor and challenge of the college classes.
The people I met and the experiences I had were amazing.
It's really easy to make new friends because we're all just in the same position of being new here.
I was able to really find my way around, and I made a lot of new friends, so it was definitely very worth it for me.
I've made friends my freshman year and when I was in NevadaFit, and I am still friends with them today, because the way you bond with them in college is on a completely different level, and it really changes your life.
Thank you so much. And I had just one more slide with our contact information if anyone needs more information. But I also wanted to share with you this last slide contains an image of our opening ceremony that you saw in the video as well. Every one of our FIT programs has a t-shirt to represent their camp or their college. We try to match graduation colors if we can. And then they sit together in our opening ceremony. So it's a pretty amazing sight to see at the start of the school year. The families sit kind of all around them. And we always love to have Regents attend the ceremony. Maybe hearing from me soon with an invitation to attend. This year, hopefully, if we can meet in groups like this this fall. So with that, Provost Thompson and I are happy to take questions, and I just want to thank you all for letting us share this program with you today.
Geddes, could I ask a question, sir?
Yes, sir. Regent Boylan.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Let me say first that this program is awesome. It's the first time I've heard of it, and I'm not surprised that President Sandoval has got something to do with it. Just awesome. I'm impressed. Now, my first question, and I've written this down like I learned from Regent McAdoo to write things down so I don't trip over my nostrils. Now, does this cost the students anything, you know, coming a week early? And does it? That's my first question. Maybe I lost it. Oh, I didn't hear it. Concentrating on my coffee. Does it cost the students anything this 1 week? Ma'am? It was, I think, Ms. Dewald?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes, ma'am.
Go ahead, Felicia.
So it is a one credit class, so students will pay registration for the course. And then we do have a course fee of $250 because we do provide students with their materials and their meals for the week, and it helps pay for our lectures. But we do work hard to fundraise to cover the fees for our low-income students, and we're usually able to cover the fees for all of our students receiving the Pell Grant, so they essentially get to attend the program at no charge. But the nice thing about it being a four-credit experience is that most students can roll this up into their existing financial aid package.
That's great. You answered my second question, too. So thank you so much. Thank you, Chair. I appreciate that, sir.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, who is that? Regent Carter.
Regent.
This is a great program. The quantitatively and statistically as well, it's a great program. I had the opportunity to go up there a few years ago, and it is really something to see them all in their shirts, building that team and camaraderie and learning ways to be resilient through their education experience at Nevada. So it's a fantastic program. Thank you.
Thank you, and I would just echo that. I was able to sit in on a ceremony after my son finished up his week of Nevada Fit, and he's never been as exhausted, I think, as getting home at 10:30, 11 o'clock every night through that week. But it was a very good experience, and he appreciated it very much. Any other questions or comments? This is information only.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'm sorry. This is Regent Carvalho. I did have a question, if I may.
Yes. Go ahead, Regent Carvalho.
I was wondering if you provided any kind of support services for the students this year, or because we see such success with this that I would hope that our freshman students this year received some sort of support that was similar to previous years. If you're able to elaborate on that.
Thank you, Regent Carvalho. I can answer that. So each college did take this on and developed a remote fit, which was certainly not as robust, and put students into packs with mentors so that, you know, they could work with other students. But we weren't able to provide them with the course introduction or the course before the semester started. But also use those mentors to help them find services electronically that we would normally have and provide some guidance. So we were able to provide some of it. But as Felicia said, it was with the transition and the quick transition, we couldn't make it all work. But I promise you, she's worked it out for next year. We're ready to go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. With that, we'll go to item number 11, new business. Do any of the regents have any new business requests to come to the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Regent Carter.
If we could just take a deeper dive sometime later on this year into what the new FAFSA, the simplified FAFSA looks like and the effects, I think that'd be worthwhile.
We'll have Crystal and Renee put that together. Good suggestion. Any others? Hearing none, seeing none, we'll go to item number 12, public comment. Winter, is there any public comment?
No public comment.
Thank you. Regent Carvalho wanted me to inform everybody that since we're done early, they're going to be starting early, and they will be starting their meeting at 9:35. 9:35, Regent Carvalho will start business, finance, and facility. And with that, we are adjourned.